Hey, what's good, everyone? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to Paychecks and Balances. We're talking about working money doesn't suck. And oh yeah, so we don't get sued, this is for entertainment purposes only.
And you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at PayBalances and on Facebook at Paychecks and Balances. Follow our individual accounts at the Marcus Garrett with one T on Twitter and two T's on Instagram. And you can find Rich at I Am Rich Jones.
I am. And if you've been enjoying the show, don't forget to subscribe and hit us with a 5-star review on Apple Podcast, where we're also currently featured in the Get Smart with Your Money category on the homepage. Definitely raising the roof. Do people still raise the roof? I feel like I shouldn't have said raise the roof.
I feel like they do not.
Okay. Your reviews let people know we're worth listening to. And if you leave a review, yours may be read on the show. Yes, I'm old and washed at 34.
But there are ups to being washed, because we're going to switch it up this week with a shout out to Corinne from the Paychecks and Balances Facebook group. And if you want to join the group and join other money conscious personal finance up and comers and do-gooders, visit paychecksandbalances.com/Facebook. From Corinne, after 14 months, I am debt free! Exclamation mark, used appropriately, which you know we love. No point. No more credit. I thought you were going to have a comment there, sir. Left me hanging.
I wasn't ready. I was still thinking about raising the roof, man.
No more credit cards and no more debt. That includes credit cards, student loans, and car loan. Paid off. The significant changes I made in my life were worth it. Exclamation mark, also used appropriately. Truly, comma, I thought I would be over the moon with excitement. However, it's more of a celebration of my whole life, not just this single moment, of realizing the fruits of much sacrifice and effort. Congratulations, Corinne.
That's what's up. That feeling of making that last payment and seeing those balances hit zero. Ah, so beautiful. So beautiful.
And as I said in the group, I also appreciate Corinne for pointing out the journey is not over. She's already got a trip planned. So just as important as getting out of debt is enjoying your money.
And that's what I was going to say is I'm glad that she got out of debt. It isn't like now my goal is just to, you know, invest. I mean, and she did go on to say some other stuff like that too, I believe, or maybe that was another comment. I don't know. But having fun, doing something enjoyable, enjoying the fruits of your efforts. Yep. I'm all about that.
That's why we, you know, we hustle so we can. I was trying to think of something quickly that rhymed, and I have failed you, listening community. But anyway.
Bum, bum, ba-da.
Whoa. But luckily, it will be saved with another informative show with America's Money Maven.
Hope you enjoy.
And we're here with Patrice Washington, a nationally recognized best-selling author, feature columnist, television commentator, radio host, and leading authority on personal finance, entrepreneurship, and success for women and youth. Patrice is the author of 3 books, including bestseller Real Money Answers for Every Woman, Real Money Answers College Life and Beyond, and Real Money Answers for Men. We may have to come back to that one. After losing her fortune in the Great Recession, she dedicated her life to not just rebuilding and reinventing her own life, but also helping the masses, that's you, the listeners, moving from debt management to money mastery. She's nationally known to rock the microphone as America's money maven, as a recurring voice on NBC, Fox News, Black Enterprise, Essence Magazine, and more. She is most well known as the personal finance voice on the top-rated, nationally syndicated Steve Harvey Morning Radio Show, where she hosts her own weekly segment, Real Money Answers with Patrice Washington. Welcome to the show, Patrice.
Oh, that sounds good. You made me sound really good. Thank you for having me.
You made it
I'm
easy.
You made with it me easy. Today.
I was sitting here like, Mama, we made it. Listening to that intro, I'm like, yo, this is a dope guest.
So I tried
well,
to do it justice. Yeah, is there anything that I might have missed on that the people need to know about you as far as your background goes?
I'm also a very proud wife of almost 10 years and a mother of a 10-year-old going on 37. And those two relationships are my greatest accomplishments, actually. So,
All right. Well, we don't want to rabbit hole too much. We'll bring it back to the personal finance. But any advice for to make it a decade in? That's pretty impressive. How'd you make it that first decade?
It definitely is. Shoot, everyone who got married at the same time as me has been divorced or separated for years.
That's why we asked the question.
Any advice? Just being willing to forgive, you know, because you're always going to do things that really irk and irritate the other person. I know we all think the other person is crazy, but you're crazy too. And they have to forgive you. And my husband and I have adopted this definition of forgiveness, which is giving up the possibility of a better past. Hmm. So instead of going down the rabbit hole, as you guys say, thinking about what if he didn't do this or she didn't do that. And you know how we do. We just think about it over and over again. We play out different scenarios. It's really just about surrendering and accepting what is and making a decision. If you're going to move forward, you can't keep going backwards. And so we learn to forgive every day. And so in like a month or two, it'll be 10 years.
That might be hashtag quote of 2017. I like that definition.
Hashtag relationship goals.
Yeah. Well, I'm sitting here because you could also probably apply that to the money side of things too.
Oh yeah. To everything. I definitely have had to apply it to money in my own journey. It's like, you just cannot stay in the place of beat up. You know, I lost everything in the recession. And if I just sat around thinking about over and over again, oh, I should have did this. I shouldn't have trusted that person. I should have definitely done that. I could live in the land of coulda, shoulda, woulda. But how does that help me progress? You know, like, I have to just forgive myself even for the bad decisions that I made. Because although there was a recession and there were a lot of people who lost money and homes and lost everything, self-esteem in the process, in the same respect, there were things that I could have done differently. And instead of beating myself up from those things, I just have tried to learn from them and keep it pushing.
So my follow-up question, who runs the checkbook?
I do.
That's what I wanted to hear. Segue.
See how clean and simple that was?
It was. That's actually the response I was hoping for. So maybe this is tied together, but how did you become the wisdom and wealth hashtag money maven of notorious Steve Harvey Show?
Well, first of all, I've known Steve Harvey since I was 19 years old. So people kind of always ask me, how did you get there? When I was 19, I became a licensed real estate professional during my sophomore year in college.
Wow.
And at the same time, I also took an internship with Steve Harvey Radio Show. And it was all because I had to quit my job, which was working front desk, graveyard, at a hotel in downtown Los Angeles. And my dad was like, you're working 50 hours a week. That's insane. Like, focus on school and get a little internship. And so I had been offered the internship at the Steve Harvey Show because I went to beg for money to restart Black Student Union on the campus. I heard Steve Harvey on the radio one day. I was driving down Figueroa, headed to USC, and I heard him talking. And I was like, he sounds like he has money. He should want to help us. I'm going to get to him and get the money. And that's what I did. They put me through a lot, but I asked for $500, ended up getting $2,000 and an internship. And that's where my relationship with him grew. So I was his intern 4 to 5 hours a morning, and then would go to class. And after class, I would show properties in the evening. And I was doing my thing in real estate. I had a mentor that was a realtor, actually a family member. And I would show properties in the evening, really got into it, really enjoyed the loan side a bit more, and decided that during my senior year, I had enough credit to go after a broker's license. So I got my California broker's license, where you could be a real estate and mortgage broker, and launched my business second semester senior year. Okay. And it was through that. You want me to stop?
No. Keep going. I have a question, but I'm gonna let you cook.
Okay, so it was like through that experience that I really started to enjoy personal finance, because a lot of my clients were, as you can imagine, at that age, twice my age, buying a home for the first time. And just in getting the documents they needed to purchase the home, people just wouldn't know basic stuff. You know, they were like, what am I pre-qualified for? I'm like, well, what is your budget? They're like, no, but what am I pre-qualified for? I'm like, well, the pre-qualification doesn't take into the fact that you might, you know, have leisurely activities that you like to do, that maybe you salsa dance on Saturday nights, or you like to give to your church. Like, you have to determine what it is you want to pay, not the other way around. And so I just became fascinated by just the behavior of grown folk, right? I start in my own stuff. I grew up in Leimert Park in South Central Los Angeles. I was not having deliberate conversations about money around the dinner table by any means. And even for myself, I got into credit card debt as soon as I hit the campus and they offered me that visor and that doggone water bottle. I had a visor, I had a t-shirt, and I had a water bottle. And for those three things I got in my freshman year, I left with $18,000 of credit card debt.
Wow.
Yo,
started with those three items.
I'm traumatized how frequently we hear these stories. They're like, I feel like credit card companies were the Cutco knives of the college campus. Like, everyone has a story that starts off with, man, I got this free t-shirt, and ends with $1,000 in debt.
It's criminal. It is absolutely criminal. But so I became really obsessed with paying off my debt and just learning more about money. So anything, any book I could read, any seminar I could attend, whether it was paid or the free ones where they try to get you at the end, whatever. I was like, there's something I can learn. And if it helps me, it'll probably help my clients. And so I developed a reputation for really walking people through their process, not just throwing them in a home or trying to force them to get a home, but really trying to prepare them to do it the right way, to make sure that they had the savings in place and, you know, just that they were mentally ready to walk into home ownership. And that business grew to a seven-figure business. My now husband, then boyfriend, and I ran the business. He was the marketing genius, and I pretty much ran all the operations. We had 16 licensed real estate professionals. And then we had 4 full-time employees. And it was great. It was great until 2007, when I found myself on bed rest in the hospital for 10 weeks. And during that 10 weeks is when I was laying there watching the news and looking at the banks just close down one by one. And so I went into the hospital with our company grossing on average about $100,000 a month was typical for us. By the time I got out, if we make $2,000, September 2007, it was a miracle, like literally. And I had real estate division, mortgage division, and I have in-house escrow, and just nothing was closing. And the banks that we use most frequently were closing down or scaling back, not taking new files. It was a mess. And I was on bed rest because I fell down the stairs in my home and went into preterm labor. So I don't know if you guys are dads at all, if you ever seen a kid, know a pregnant woman. But if this happens to you at 20 weeks pregnant, you got a problem.
Yeah. At first I was like, no, wait, I've seen a kid once. So yeah.
You've
like,
seen a kid like, once?
So yeah. I was like, I don't think I'm a dad.
Oh my God. Well, I hope you're not if you don't know at this point. But I took a fall down the stairs. I ended up in labor halfway through the pregnancy, halfway through what a full-term pregnancy would look like. And so that's how I got on bed rest. And my doctor came in one day and said, you know what, if you don't stop stressing out, because, you know, when you're in the hospital, you wear this monitor, this belt that monitors the baby and just your contractions and all of that. And she's like, if you don't stop stressing out, you're going to leave here 2 years in a row with no kid, because the year before I had also lost a son around the same time. Wow. And I just made a decision like, you know what? I can't keep stressing myself out about money, about an 800 credit score, about keeping up with all these properties and all this stuff. If I want to have a family and if I want to, you know, if I want to really live out the fullness of what I think I'm here to do, because that was just one piece. It's the piece I got comfortable with, but I always wanted to be a wife and a mother too. And so I was like, you know, I got to surrender, which wasn't hard. I mean, I'm sorry, which wasn't easy. It was actually very hard, but it still was the decision that I made in the moment. And I asked them to take the TV out of my room, off the wall, the little box TV on the little swivel thing, asked them to take it out. And for like 6 more weeks, I did not watch TV at all. I asked not to know what was going on in real estate world. And I just committed that I would deal with it when I got out. And when I got out, several weeks later, it was a whole new world. The business was failing day by day. I had enough savings to keep us afloat for another year or so. But I kind of wish I hadn't, honestly. Like, that's one of the big lessons for me, is that I didn't really understand how to ask for help yet. You know, I didn't understand going to the mentors in the real estate game or people who could have mentored me, who may have seen this before, seen something like it in the 80s, who could like really say, hey, you need to cut these expenses, you know, make some decisions, lay off a few folks, they'll get some unemployment, they'll be okay, you know, like, but you have to make some decisions to safeguard yourself. And we just didn't know better. We didn't know better. So we didn't. And we exhausted the savings trying to keep it all afloat. And it just never rebounded. And by 2009, I was out of it.
Wow. So I'm listening to all this and I'm like, it sounds like every day you were hustling, going back to even high school, college. And I hear a lot of ambition. So I'm just curious, where does that come from for you?
I think it comes from being raised by two really strong single women, my mom and my grandma. Mm. And I just watched them work so hard. I watched them work really hard. You know, I even think about being an author now, like every time people read my bio and they talk about me writing these three books and having a bestseller, I'm like, man, my grandma came to this country illiterate. You know, my grandmother really never read a book except the Bible. Like, and she just had it memorized. Like she, like to know that that's what I come from. I feel like I'm standing on their shoulders. You know, they came here for me to have this opportunity. And I just, it's always been in me that I wasn't going to waste it.
Mm. That just gave me a little bit of a goosebump action there. Not going to lie. Not going to lie.
Yeah, this is awesome. And we've highlighted it a few times, so I definitely want to touch on it in more detail. You mentioned mentors. We're really big on mentors, coaches, sponsors. How did these individuals, either did you realize their importance in your life, or when did they become more important in your life? And what advice did they offer?
Well, they actually became more important when I started to embrace their existence. Like, I refer to these people that I just mentioned now as mentors, but in the moment, I didn't really understand what mentorship was. Like, it really wasn't promoted. You know, people where I come from didn't really talk about having a mentor. And so I didn't know to call on people at the time. But the thing that changed everything for me and has led me to becoming America's money maven was when I ended up going from this seven-figure business to scraping up change, literally. And we lost our 6,000 square foot home in Southern California and ended up living in this 600 square foot apartment in Metairie, Louisiana, of all places, from Los Angeles to Louisiana. And it was in this little apartment where at one point I just was like, I just couldn't take it anymore. Like, I was just sick and tired of being sick and tired. We lived in the hood. It's different when you grow up in the hood and you know that city. You know, so I lived in LA in the hood, but it was my hood.
Yeah, you don't want to be in unfamiliar hoods. I'm actually familiar with that struggle.
We were in Louisiana in an unfamiliar hood. And I was like, my God, how did I get here? Like, what in the world? And I just could not take it anymore. I'm not lying, you guys. I was on the floor one day, snotting and crying and like just the good, ugly cry. Just, God, why? How? And I'm telling you, like, I felt this urge, this nudge, you know, I'm real churchy. I grew up in a church, so I'll call it a still small voice, but it was like, get your Bible. And there's this scripture I found, Proverbs 17:16. And it said, what good is money in the hands of a fool if they have no desire to seek wisdom? And like, it really hit me. It still hits me to this day because I realized that I had a lot of money, but I was not big on seeking wisdom. I was not big on asking for help. As I said, I grew up with two strong single women, my mom and my grandma, and I never watched them ask for help. Like, they made it happen with literally nothing, you know, a lot of times. And I didn't know how to say, hey, I don't know how to do X. I grew up always just figuring it out, making it happen. And I, at this point, when I was on the floor crying, I had exhausted everything I knew how to do. All my little plots, all my little plans, all the, oh, if we did this, it'll turn into that. Like, nothing was working out. And that scripture helped me realize that I needed to learn how to seek wise counsel. Like, what good is money if I didn't have the wisdom? Not knowledge. I had knowledge. I had education. I had degrees. I had the license. What I didn't know was how to apply the knowledge. And that's what wisdom is. It's like, how do you apply what it is you know? And the Bible talks a lot about seeking wise counsel. And that's what it is. Like, that is the moment where I realized you got to ask for help. And you can't be too prideful. You can't be, you know, too proud, too ashamed, too embarrassed, which I was at the time. I was like, man, I'm the one that made it. How am I supposed to ask anybody for help? And I honestly at times didn't know what to ask, but I started to just accept the story for what it was. You know, like I talked about forgiveness earlier, like I start to just accept the story for what it is. Like, if not asking for help means this is about to be my life, I'd rather ask for help and take the risk of embarrassment. Mm. Like, F it. I can't. Like, this can't, like, I can't live like this forever. So I would rather say, hey, you seem smart. You seem wise. You seem like you have something going on. I don't even know what it is I'm supposed to ask you, but let me tell you my story and see if you can help me fill in some blanks. And that's what I started to do. And I started to really watch people from a distance, because I think sometimes we get it twisted with mentors. We feel like they have to be someone that you know, that you can call every day, that you can talk to or sit down with for lunch. I started to really watch people, especially as it, you know, pertains to the personal finance space. I just started to watch from a distance and look at how they were setting up their businesses and what types of opportunities they were getting in. You know, what are, like, just what was out there. And I watch people from a distance and I try to learn as much as I can. So I've really embraced mentorship, both personal contact, but also virtual mentorship as well.
Now, you were saying something a second ago that made me think of something that we talked about with another guest. So when people see you succeeding, you're doing well, of course, there's that feeling of maybe not wanting to ask for help. But did you ever have any guilt around the success that you were having, because maybe there were people in your family or friends who weren't having as much success for you? So did you ever have that struggle where maybe you didn't want people to have the perception that you were as successful as you were?
Well, first of all, back then, this is well before the age of social media, most people really couldn't tell how to, like, they knew I was doing well. My husband and I had matching Range Rovers. And we had this office in Manhattan Beach and all this stuff. But people really didn't come to the office, and there were no selfies, and there was nowhere to post pictures and stuff. So I really feel like back then there was less pressure. You could do really well. And unless you wanted to just be flossy, people just wouldn't even know. Like, my mom didn't even realize that we had crossed the $1 million mark until much later. Mm. You know, so I didn't feel that pressure, but I was still the one. I was the first to graduate from a 4-year university in my family. And, you know, there was definitely, I would say, with some of my family members, a hint of envy sometimes. There's jealousy and then there's envy. You know, you got some cousins that's like, that's supposed to be me. You know, we all have them. Somebody thinks that whatever you have is supposed to be theirs. So what I used to do was feel the pressure of, okay, if my cousin is being, I feel like they're being envious or they're being jealous, let me pacify them by whenever they need something, if they come to me, I just give it to them. No questions asked. Mm. And that's one of those lessons I was talking about that I learned through the process that I could have done better at. Yes, there was a recession. Yes, there was a lot of stuff going on in the economy, but in my own personal economy, I could have done more. And what I was trying to do was buy likes. You know, now people are buying likes on Instagram. No, I was buying likes by giving money to people who never had an intention of paying me back. They never had an intention of, you know, people like, let me hold something. You're supposed to hold it and return it. You're not supposed to hold it forever, right? And I would just like let people do stuff like that. But because I knew I always had so much money coming in, I would feel a little guilty making a big deal about it. But let me tell you, I have been delivered from that spirit. That is no longer the spirit. Because when I really added it up, I probably had about $25,000 outstanding to me, just given to people over the years, $1,000 here, $2,000 there. You know, people whose rent always catches them by surprise. Like, it's always this big thing. Like, oh my gosh, rent just popped up. I didn't even know. It's like, no, you knew because you just took a vacation 2 weeks ago. But anyway, so I stopped letting their emergencies, their lack of planning, excuse me, become my emergency. And one of the greatest lessons I took away from that is just the power to say no. Like, I am so swift with my no these days. It's not even a joke. And I'm unapologetic about it. Because when I was down and out and scraping up change, nobody could help me. And one of the things that Steve Harvey taught me during the time I was in the radio booth with him all the time is that the best thing you can do for a broke person is not become one of them. The best thing you can do for a broke person is not become one of them. Because if you do, now you're two broke people looking at each other. And I'm not about to let other people drive me into brokedom trying to buy life.
Yo, write down brokedom. That tentative show topic right there.
So,
like, I'm just not going to do it.
So was there a turning point where someone asked you for something and you went to give it to them and then you were like in the bathroom doing your makeup or something and you were like, you know what? I ain't doing this anymore.
No, there wasn't. There was that decision came from really going back to that whole mentor piece. When I really started to embrace this whole concept of wise counsel and mentorship and just thinking of the people that God had already put in my life for years and those lessons that I just let slip by me. You know, I just thought about, because when I was really trying to get through this valley period that I was in, I really went back and took personal inventory. And I thought about all the things I could have done differently. And that was one of them. When I added up how much such and such owed me, plus what such and such owed me, and these ones said, let me hold some, never returned it, came back for more, we gave it to them again. And I start adding that up. I'm like, man, I'm here scraping up change. I'm here shaking purses, trying to find additional money. I'm literally here begging this power man to turn the electricity back on, because if he leaves and this electricity is off that I can't afford to pay today, my baby is not going to have milk tonight. Mm. Like that, like when I looked at my life and where I was and I thought about what Steve said, the worst thing you could do for a broke person is become one of them. And I saw in that season that I had become the broke people that I was enabling. I was like, oh, heck no. No, you got to do better. You got to do better. And my husband and I talked about it, and we talked about what we would do. We always were like, so when we get our money back up, you know, it wasn't an if, it was just a when. When we get our money back up, if such and such comes to us, what are we going to say? And we start writing out our scripts. And to this day, we still use a lot of those scripts. I'm not joking. We still use a lot of those scripts. Like, you ask Steve for money, you need to be ready. You need to be ready for what's coming.
Would you happen to have any of those scripts behind in an email opt-in?
I might want to do that. That's actually a good point.
Lead magnet.
Note to self. Let me jot that down. I love feedback. I'm coachable. But yeah, like I would have a script. Like one of the scripts is, you know, because we love you, we're not going to be able to lend you any money. But what we can do is offer you a one-time gift of, and the one-time gift is never the full amount of what they want. It's never. You need to participate in your own rescue. If you need $1,000, I'm probably going to hit you with like $300-$500 because it's not based on what you want. It's based on my budget for giving.
And every month
we set aside. It's a one-time gift. And in the memo, it says one-time gift. And let me tell you about the power of that. I don't exchange cash, only check. So that if it ever comes back, you're really clear. I'm really clear. I don't need it back from you. I'm not going to look at you crazy at Thanksgiving. I'm not going to feel some kind of way at Christmas when your kids are decked out like unnecessarily because they're not even passing their little classes. I'm not going to judge. I'm not going to judge. But this is a one-time gift. One time. And that's it. And no one has come back for a second time since we started doing this. Nobody. Because we're very clear. We're like, so, you know, if I give this to you, that's it. And just, like, we're just clear. But there have been other people in our family and friends who never asked. But that's what that budget, that giving budget is for. It's for the people where we really want to support them. And they would never ask. You know, they would never say that they were in need. But if we know that they're in need and we feel so led or inclined to give, then we don't mind taking care of stuff for people. That's just who we are. And I don't mind giving, but you won't be a taker. I don't like takers. I give all day, but you just won't be a taker, like intentionally coming and with the whole spirit or motive of, well, they got it. They got it. I got it because I worked for it. You know, people do that. Well, you got it. Right. Because I worked for it. Go get you some. Go get it.
Because
enabling doesn't help. Yeah, enabling doesn't help. I'll empower you. Now, if you want to know how I got it, I'll share all day. And not only that, back to virtual mentors. I've done hundreds of interviews. hundreds of interviews. Like, literally, if you want to learn how I got it, or you want to learn my philosophy on XYZ, go listen to stuff. That's the other thing. It's like, you know, friends and family, they can listen to other people all day long. They want your money. But then if you try to give them some advice, I ain't trying to hear all that. Well, then you don't want my money, because my money comes with empowerment resources. Okay. If you don't want to hear all that, then this is not the place for you. God bless you. Bye.
You reminded me, and I'm a tie this back together to hood adjacent, you know, to bring the people back home. Also, I specifically know somebody from Louisiana that listens to the show, so I want to say shout out to them and no shots to you. Louisiana is a wonderful boot country, state, and city. But that, you actually reminded me, for my 80 gold rings and chains fellas out there, me and my cousin were sitting around and we realized that we probably spent $250,000 on alcohol.
I'm
saying dramatic pause. I let that sink in. And people are like, that's impossible. You know, what's the math behind that? First of all, there's two of us. And we've been drinking liberally since 21. So that's 13 years. Let's just say we only went once a month, even though we've gone more times than that. Even if we only spent $100 a month, that's 156 months. So we're looking at, let me go ahead, whip out the calculator, 156 times one. That's 15,000 right there. But what we started looking at is, let's be honest, we probably went four times a month easily. And if we, let's just be real, spent 200, that gets us to 125,000 apiece. and then we just rubbed our chins and stared into the sky. So I say that to say, if you're going to go out there and drop on that $200 bottle or $200 date, and you are around 21 years old, and you plan on doing that for the next 13 years, stop, because you're about to spend $250,000. So, you know,
not only that, stop, and then make sure you don't ask the people who aren't outspending that for their money. Like, don't ask me after you have, you know, wet your whistle and did whatever you wanted to do, had a really great time. Now you want to make your lack of planning my emergency. Because you know how people are when they want money from you, right? It's not like, it's always like, are they going to text you five times? They're going to call back to back. They have no regard for what you're doing, what you got going on. It's all about them and their emergency. But you created this emergency. I didn't. But so why am I now responsible?
I actually think that's a good point. You got to show, you said you do and want to teach. I think you've got the Redefining Wealth podcast coming. What do you see as your goal, mission, or vision for this show? Or what we've been talking about it?
No, it's actually pretty different. So one of the things that people have asked me for so many years is like, how did you get off the floor? You know, you were in the bathroom, sobbing and crying, you reach for your Bible, and then boom, you're on the Steve Harvey Show. Like, what happened in between? And a lot of work has happened in between. And what I really wanted to communicate to people is not much of that work had to do with money. Like, a lot of the work that I've done on myself was not about just a budget and trying to fix my credit. Like, those things were important, but I realized that a lot of what I've attracted and what's manifested in my life, especially over the last like 3 or 4 years, it really came from doing more meaningful stuff. Like, the Redefining Wealth podcast, which is out already, you guys, is based on 6 pillars. And I'll just give you like an overview of like a couple of them. Like, the first pillar is fit. And fit is about becoming your best self. And most people be like, oh, you might not want to hear this, Marcus, since you've been out drinking $250,000 worth of.
This is old me. this is washed Marcus now. That was back when I was, you know, out here being a savage.
Did you say washed Marcus?
Yeah, this is washed Marcus talking to y'all now. The refined gentleman that y'all know and love today.
Okay. Praise the Lord. So, you know, the fit pillar people think is about going to the gym and working out, which is a piece. But really, one of the things that I really have to take a look at is, especially after being in the hospital back to back with those babies and having so many issues, when I look relatively fit, I've been relatively thin my entire life. I've pretty much looked the same since I was like in 10th grade, literally could wear the same jeans. That had nothing to do with how healthy I was. I also had several health challenges despite looking thin or being thin. And so the fit piece was about me going, you know what? If you're praying for this huge vision to come to pass, if you got it today, is your body ready to receive it? Like, could you really walk into it? Do you really have the capacity to handle it? And the truth was, I didn't. I didn't have the capacity to I mean, I couldn't run from here to down the street a couple of years, like maybe 5 years ago, like at all without falling over and huffing and puffing. Looked thin, but I wasn't fit at all. I had high blood pressure, diagnosed with high blood pressure at 28. And like all kinds of things, other things I can't even pronounce anymore. I've walked around with tubes going up my nose, down my throat, into my stomach to monitor what was going on in my gut for 2 days. I mean, like so many different things that you just wouldn't expect. And the reality was, if I got the opportunities that I have now, 5 years ago, I wouldn't have been ready for them. I wouldn't be ready to go on national book tours. I wouldn't be ready to stand at the end of every book signing, like at the end of every talk. I just spoke last night at an event. And I was up for 2 hours hugging and talking and signing books and looking eyeball to eyeball with people. And that's what I love. That's what I'm passionate about. But if I wasn't physically capable, right, like I couldn't walk walk the path that I was destined to walk, I feel like. And being able to do that is what gets me closer and closer to my wealth. Like we talk about going hard and, you know, hustling and the hustle and grind mode and not sleeping and all this. And we honor busyness, busy for the sake of being busy, but not actually being productive. And to me, that just became more important. And so I don't cloud my time just being busy anymore, just so I could say, I'm out here hustling, y'all. I'm doing my thing. Selfie, hashtag, getting it done, getting it in. And I look crazy because I haven't slept in days. Like that's not honoring the vessel that's needed to execute the vision. And so that's like a pillar. So it doesn't necessarily, it's not about checks, you know, it's not about paychecks. It's not about credit. It's not about budget, but it definitely is also something that gets you to your wealth. Mm. And can I do one more pillar?
Go ahead.
Just one more.
That's why I paused.
Another pillar that's been really, really helpful is people. The second pillar is people, and it's about creating relationships that matter. So I just want to share this one because it ties back into that whole mentor thing and how I got on the Steve Harvey show. So I left Steve Harvey in 2003 when I graduated from college and went off to really pursue the real estate and mortgage business, grew that successfully, as you know. But then when I ended up losing everything, first I was in Louisiana and then I ended up in Atlanta. And around the same time that I moved to Atlanta, I actually wasn't moving. I just was kind of sick of Louisiana. Shout out to that listener, no disrespect, but I was sick of Louisiana and I wanted to go visit my brother for a week in Atlanta. And a week turned into me sleeping on his couch for 3.5 months with my baby. And my husband stayed back in New Orleans in Metairie because he had taken a job at Taco Bell just to make sure that we had health insurance. And we could not afford at the time for him to not have that job. So we had to live separately. And we lived separately for about 3.5 months. I was on my brother's couch and ended up running into some other folks who worked on the show, but then going to visit with Steve and his manager at the time, Rashawn McDonald, who was also a mentor of mine. And as soon as they knew I was there, I told them what happened, that, you know, what happened in real estate. They were aware of the whole bubble bursting and stuff. First thing they said was like, okay, so you want a job? It's like 5 years hadn't passed, or how much time? 2003 to 2010 at this time, 7 years had passed. Seven years had passed. And they gave me a shot. I worked in the office for just a year. But it was a chance to like just get back on my feet. And so when I talk about relationships mattering, one of the things that both Rashawn and Steve taught me, it was at the first, they used to do this event called the Neighborhood Awards. And I worked at the very first one at the Forum in Inglewood, California. And they taught me a really valuable lesson. I came in because everyone at work said, we're just going to come in sweats. And then later on in the evening, we'll change into, you know, our real clothes. So I followed along with the team, like with all the workers, and I came in sweats. And Steve always had a policy about everyone dressing like they have somewhere to go. Just because we're here at 5 a.m., that doesn't mean you roll in here in your pajamas. And so I was always dressed up for the most part, but I was working the event and I came in sweats. And like when they saw me, it was like slow motion. Like they stopped talking. They just looked at me and Steve said, "What the hell you got on? Like, what the hell are you doing?" And I was like trying to explain. I'm like, "Oh, well, you know, everyone said they were coming in sweats." And he's like, "Don't you know it's always someone watching you who has the power to bless you? What you doing out here looking like you're not ready to be blessed?" Mm-hmm. And that just like, boom, like that just hit me. I went to a friend's house that lived a block away and got some clothes and changed immediately and came back. Like I had some sense, like I was ready for my blessing. And those relationships, you know, it's like those types of things have just mattered. And that is a part of building wealth. Like it was because of that. It was because of him giving me that nugget when I was like 20 years old and me carrying that into, you know, my future, just doing that for years and years. So when he saw me and he knew by that time, I was like, you know, I really want to help people with personal finances. Like, I know my stuff is jacked up. I'm very clear. However, I lost all my money, but my mind isn't bad. And I feel like this is what I'm being called to do. So I really want to do this. And the more I got out there and just start doing things, like I just start speaking at the library. People are always like, "How do I become a speaker?" You go speak. Yeah. Like I was speaking at the library in front of 4 people. Like I was just volunteering to do stuff at small churches. I was volunteering because I just wanted to perfect the message. I just wanted to really learn my voice, like really own my own voice. And Steve heard that I was out there doing my thing. I was seeing from time to time. And when it came time to release Real Money Answers for Every Woman, when I self-published it originally, when it came time to release it, his producer reached out to me and said, "Mr. Harvey wants you to be on. Like, you ready to do your book?" And I was like, "Yeah, like, sure, absolutely." And it was supposed to be a one-time interview. And it actually turned into a weekly segment that I've been doing for going on 4 years in January.
It's crazy.
Nice. So unfortunately, I think we're at the end of the light of the tunnel, but there does seem to be a lot of light. I actually think we might have to have you back, but I'm going to tease up.
Man, yes.
I definitely was creating a list and I see there's like probably 6 things on it we didn't get to. So we're going to have to work this out, sis.
No, let's do some more. Can we do one more? Anything? I like y'all.
Yes.
That's my Louisiana and Georgia living, y'all.
Matter of fact, we can. I'll pass the torch to you. You go as far as narrow as you want. But I had to ask. You have how to win. One of your talking points is how to win the money game with or without a man.
Yeah.
I turn it over to you.
So when I was on the road, I'm always on the road. But before this book, when I was on the road, I would go to places and talk to women in particular. And I just got fed up with hearing people say like, "Oh, my husband does that. Oh, you know, my husband takes care of it." Or when I get married, I expect my husband to be able to. I'm like, who's to say that you're going to marry someone who is a personal finance aficionado? Like, who's to say that the dude is going to be good with money? Like, you just don't know. My husband is a phenomenal businessman, paying bills, not so much. Like, he's great at making money, but we're going to be in here in the dark. That just is what it is if we leave it to him.
So you're the person that opens the mail?
Yes, gladly.
Because I, as much as I've talked about it on the show, I still struggle from time to time with like opening the mail. So I know that that's often a thing that leads to people not being able to pay bills. I do stay on top of it at that level. I also got auto pay.
Look, bro, I'm so old. I was writing a story about growing up and I typed in mailed. And Word was like, "Do you mean emailed?" I was like, "Word, if you don't get out my face." Like, I was offended. Like, it read underlined it like, "I think you mean emailed." I'm like, "Mother, I know what I'm talking about."
Right. No, I still check the mail. I do still check the mail. But I had to train myself because during the season when we were losing everything, I had 13 pieces of property. Like, I ended up foreclosing on 3 and short selling the rest. And those are just letters you don't want to get. And so going to the mailbox was depressing for a season, I'm not going to lie. And then I just started to train myself, like, no, what if there's a surprise check in there? You're going to miss it. Because, you know, those cancel after like 90 days. Don't play yourself. Go open your mail. I start talking to myself, like, surprise checks and cancel debt. And I do. I talked about that actually on the Redefining Wealth podcast in the money pillar. I was talking about, you know, what you nurture grows. And a part of how you start to nurture your money is by doing things like opening your mail, like paying attention, like you're in relationship, you know, with money. And that's one of the ways that you improve the relationship. And my little brother, I kid you not, sends me a text message. I was in the Bahamas recently. He sends me a text message and he's like, I got two things. The first envelope, he sends me a screenshot or a picture, is a check for 32 cents. I don't know what kind of class action settlement he signed up for, but he got his little 32 cent check. And he was like, but it's money though. And I respect it. You know, we're talking about respecting any denomination. But then the next thing he opened up, no lie, my hand to heaven, is a freaking notice of cancellation of debt from an old private student loan, $8,700 something.
Oh, wow.
I'm not lying at all. It was effective August 21st, 2017. And he's like, do you think this is real? I'm like, call him. Like, yeah, call him. Call him and see what happened. And so I was in the Bahamas. This is just a couple of days ago. We didn't even get deep into it. But it's legit. It says, like, outstanding balance is zero, effective August 21st. What? And he called to verify. Yes.
See, this is how I know I'm still hood adjacent, because I'd have just walked with the letter. Like, you're like, call, find out. I'm like, nope. I'm take this blessing and move on. Like, I'm good. They say it's canceled. It's canceled. No more bills or payments for me.
My little brother is hood adjacent too, because he was like, I feel like I just need to keep the letter. Like, why would I question Jesus?
Right, yeah.
Like, boy, I feel you better question just in case somebody made a mistake and now you got a 90-day late on your credit. Don't play. You better check. You like trying to do stuff.
I feel like they already got my contact information, you know. So I think I have one follow-up question. You may have hit on it. Do you think your personal advice would differ? Because a lot of people are interested in this, and they actually jump on us for this because they say we don't hit on it enough.
You mean personal advice or device?
Both. I'll go with both, but personal advice is what I meant to say. Thanks for embarrassing me, Rich.
I mean, because those are two completely different things, brother. But anyway, let's keep it moving.
Okay, that's what we're doing. What do people need to do differently to build wealth versus budgeting, saving money, or what mental changes they need to make? Is that all one umbrella, or do you see that as different pillars?
I see it as different pillars. I really do see it as the pillars around redefining wealth. Because I've been saying for years that I don't think that building wealth or getting out of debt or saving or any of that stuff is really about money. I really do think it's about our mindset towards money, but that seems so abstract for most people, right? Like, this whole mindset conversation is still relatively new, and people go, yes, I need to change my mindset. And they think that that's like an affirmation or two in the morning, you know, 10 times while you're brushing your teeth or something. And I don't see it as that at all. I really see it as shifting any daily habits in particular that don't support you, that don't serve you. Because I really think that a lot of us are just cluttered. You're not even free to think about how you're going to build wealth or to use the budget that you printed out. It was so pretty and nice and full of colors. And when you printed it out, you were so excited. And that's as far as it went. Like, there's something else that has to happen. And a lot of that for me has to do with mindset. But again, to change your mindset, you have to change your habits, like, because your habits are what dictate your results. And so the more you start to see beneficial results, the more your mindset starts to shift to, oh, this is what we do. Okay, so I'm gonna keep doing this. But until you get into action, you don't see it. So your mindset, like, your mind is always gonna prove you right. So if you keep having the same results, bad credit, no money in the bank, overdraft fees, whatever that is, not getting opportunities in the workforce or whatever, you're gonna prove to yourself that that's what it is. Your mind is conditioned to believe that that's all that's available to you, and that the rest of us out here, there's just something magical that's happening. And that's not true. It's based on the habits that we're putting in place. I don't believe that I'm lucky. I don't believe that what's happened to me, being able to build the business the first time, lose everything and rebuild again. Like, I don't think that that's a matter of, oh, because I do affirmations, you know, and stuff. It's the actions that I put into place on a daily basis, period, point blank. And not all of it is looking at the budget every day. It's in every area of my life.
I really appreciate you saying that, because people are always asking. I do think they, because I think that's what you're taught. You know, we're all, you know, a one movie away from Disney princesses and Disney princesses. So I feel that we think it's like this magic moment. And people always ask me, like, when? Just when? Like, there had to be something. And if I had to narrow it down to something specifically, for me, it was the first zero. So I actually just started. I'm like, okay, what's the worst that can happen if I was responsible for like 6 months? And the first time, it was actually a school loan. It was the first bill I paid off. It was a few thousand. And when I got that, yeah, like that notice of cancellation, like you said with your brother, in my case, it was paid off. I was like, wow. Like, it was even surprising to me, but it was just repeating habits. I'm like, seeing a balance at zero, I'm like, wow, yeah. What if I could see all of these balances at zero?
Yeah, and so it motivates you to do what you have to do to get the next one down.
Right.
Like, now you have something in front of you, but you wouldn't have known what that feeling felt like had you not gotten into action in the first place.
Yes, ma'am.
Because people think that they can have the feeling by talking about it. You cannot.
Speak it into existence.
Like, chatting about it is not enough. Like, you got to do something.
And so I think we're now, we done teased him once. I think we're at the real.
No, I really. Yeah, I think we're at the real.
Yeah, I think we're at the real close out. Is there a specific show that you want to recommend for them to listen to start off with to get an idea for your podcast? And then where can they find you on the social medias or contacts?
Well, you can definitely find out all about me at patricewashington.com. And everywhere on social media, that's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, can find me by my handle, which is Seek Wisdom PCW, Seek Wisdom PCW. And I would love for you to download the Redefining Wealth podcast. There are 6 episodes out of the first, I think, 8 that are there that really just break down the pillars one by one. And so you can really learn more about what are those things that you want to put into practice on a daily basis that may seem like they have nothing to do with money. But I really believe the true meaning of wealth is about well-being. And if you focus on these things that I lay out in the pillars, it's going to get you closer to the wealth that you desire.
That's what's
up. I can promise that.
You heard it here first, people. Go out there, pursue that first zero, find your path using the first 6 episodes or the pillars at the Redefining Wealth podcast.
Yes. And so, yeah, thanks so much for joining us. And we hope that people get a lot from this, because I know we did.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you both.
Well, that was mighty fun.
I'm already enacting the power of not saying. Well, I'm already enacting the power of saying no. I can't wait to turn people down.
Yo, saying no is something I definitely had to step up in the past 6 months, year. I mean, in the past few months alone, I thought I was saying no enough, but then I eventually realized I was not. And she was talking during the show about getting to that point of burnout and bed rest and all this other stuff. And it made me think about some of the self-care things we've talked about over the past couple of months. And I had so many more questions, topics, but then she just kept saying good stuff. And I was like, I don't want to break her flow, but I also know we got limited time. So yeah, we definitely got to get her back on the podcast.
And I'm reminded of an article, which I already know that I'm committing myself to finding now. Hopefully you can find it in the Googles if I cannot. But it also talked about slightly viral. I don't know what viral means anymore. The power of the not to-do list. So we always focus on to-do lists and vision boards. But he was talking about it's equally important to point out what you're not going to do. Start, stop, continue.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever made a not to-do list. And I'm trying to figure out what would be on it. Anything come to mind for you that you'd be okay sharing with thousands of people?
Saying no more often is going on. I guess that would go on the to-do list. God!
You see what I mean? You see how difficult that is? All right. Maybe that's something that we need to come back to on a future episode. Our list of the top 5 not-to-dos or something like that.
Do not freestyle on the show when you don't have words that rhyme or quotes committed to memory. That's going on the not-to-do list.
Do not publicly ask people if they're going to be somewhere that you know they're not.
Boom.
There we go. All right. So if you've enjoyed today's episode and or found it useful, be sure to share and hit us with those 5 stars in Apple Podcast. As we always say, the more people we reach, the more people we help.
And don't forget to join our email list by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/email. You'll receive our weekly newsletter where we share interesting articles we've discovered, actionable work and money tips, and much more.
So as usual, thanks to everyone for listening. Dope time, dope guest. Until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.